Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Time for the Friday gathering now, and this week I'm joined by Fine Gael TD for Dublin Rathdown and Minister of State with responsibility for financial services, credit unions and insurance, Neil Richmond, Labour TD for Dublin Fingal, party whip and spokesperson on health, disability, transport and communications, Duncan Smith, political correspondent at the Irish Mirror, Louise Byrne, and Sunday Times political correspondent, Claire Scott. You're all very welcome. Thank you for being here. I'm going to start with something we were talking about on the programme yesterday, and it's making the headlines again today. Helen McEntee, the Justice Minister, decision not to attend the GRA annual conference, the Garda Representative Association. This was because she said they refused to invite the Garda Commissioner. Neil, I'm going to start with you. I mean, it's a very difficult situation because the rank and file Gardaí now, I mean, how can they be expected to be persuaded by Helen McEntee to back the Garda Commissioner and to work with him when she's not there?
Well, Helen met the GRA executive a week or two ago. She meets Garda members constantly and consistently. She was put in a very difficult position when it comes to the conference because she backs every single member of An Garda Síochána, from commissioner down to newly attested guard out of Temple Moor. And she doesn't just back it through rhetoric. She doesn't just back it through meetings. But we see the massive budget for An Garda Síochána that we have at the moment, over 2 billion euro, one of the most largest budgets we've ever had in the history of the state. In fact, the largest budget, including new resources, new abilities and new sanctions. Mm. So she's absolutely listening to the guards, all their concerns, and continuing to back them, because we are the party, of course, who did set up An Garda Síochána traditionally.
Well, we know that the GRA have said publicly that they're disappointed in this decision. But Paul Reynolds had sources from the GRA saying that they found that this is a snub and that they see that she's taking sides now with the commissioner.
Well, I think Helen made it quite clear quite some time ago that she would have hoped that the GRA invited the commissioner to the conference, as did the Association of Garda Sergeants and Inspectors a couple of weeks ago, and she attended that conference with the commissioner, as they always have done. She has to be a Minister of Justice for every single member of Garda Síochána. She has backed that in terms of the money that she's put in, the resources and the times and engagement.
What do you think about this decision, Duncan? Right or wrong?
I think it's wrong. I think she should have gone. I think she should have gone to the conference. I mean, just... She will have met the, as Neil said, the executive of the GRA. But like, even my own organisation, if I just met the executive members of my local constituency and didn't meet the ordinary members heading into an election at any time, you know, like, how could I expect them to have any faith in me or to feel connected with me? The GRA National Conference is their big set piece event. It gets media coverage. It's where they all come together from all over the country. The minister should be there, even if she is to go. To say that, to put it up to the members and try and heal divisions and heal rifts. But the members have a huge problem with Drew Harris. It's unprecedented. And this move by the minister, I feel, has compounded that. She should be healing the rifts rather than widening them further. But
do you accept she was put in a very difficult position? Like, we Dermot Ahern on, former justice minister here, and he was saying, you know, she's in an invidious position here. It's very difficult.
I've never been a minister, but being a minister is difficult. There are difficult decisions to make, and this is one of them. But I think she's made the wrong one, and I think it's going to extend the rift that exists in An Garda Síochána between senior management and ordinary members. Will make it harder to heal that rift. And if we're going to tackle the systemic problems we have at the moment and improve Garda morale, improve Garda numbers, we need the minister to be leading all Gardaí and representing the people as well. The people have an invisible role there. She's the minister for the people in relation to justice, and I feel she should be there at that conference.
So, Claire, the Fine Gael under Simon Harris has put law and order at the centre of their agenda. So how does that play, and how will it play with the electorate when you have this big standoff now between the Garda, the commissioner, the minister and the rank and file in the Guards?
I agree. I think the optics of this are terrible now. And I think that lines have been drawn, that there's a leadership versus rank and file Gardaí now. So we've seen a massive push from Simon Harris since he became Fine Gael leader. There was the speech he made at the European Selection Convention in Athlone, then his own Ardèche speech, that there is massive focus now on law and order and rectifying a lot of damage that has been done since the Dublin riots and before, and trying to restore trust within An Garda Síochána and trust with the public that we will have An Garda Síochána out on the beat more. There will be higher visibility. So look, I think she was put in a difficult position, but I think now there needs to be a demonstration of support for guards. And whether that's, you know, attendance next week or in another form, there's going to be she's going to have a lot of meetings in the coming weeks to try and restore that confidence.
I don't know what that looks like, though. If the minister doesn't go, she plans not to go, we know that, next Tuesday to the conference, how does she show support for the guards in another way?
Well, I think it's quite clear as how she's shown for the guards already. Helen's visited every single Garda station across the country. She meets rank and file Gardaí every single day. She's met the GRA executive multiple times. But more importantly, we're seeing the salaries for guards going up. We're seeing resolution when it comes to rosters. We're listening to their concerns. We're putting more money into resources, be it in terms of ICT, be it in terms of more Garda cars, more uniforms, changing the uniforms, if that's what they want. But crucially, we're recruiting more people into the Gardaí. We saw yet another class coming out of Templemore 2 weeks ago. We're moving that up a pace. We're making sure that their skills are recognised, and the future of policing survey that was carried out a number of years ago, that is being implemented.
But the brass tacks issue, Neil, is that they have no faith in their boss. That's what they've said. They've taken a vote on it in the GRA.
The minister has made it very clear. We go back to the response to the Dublin riots and what we saw from not Duncan's party, and I'll never criticise Duncan's party for this sort of thing, but we saw a certain opposition party, their first reaction was to put a motion of confidence in the commissioner and in Helen. That's playing politics. We don't believe in playing politics. The minister has absolute confidence in every single member of An Garda Síochána, and more importantly is displaying that confidence with real action in terms of not just meeting them but actually providing the money and the resources to make sure that yes, we are the party law and order, and we believe in it.
Louise, what do you make of this situation, the politics of it, and how it's going to play out?
I think the issue is that it has been made political. And I mean, if you look at that GRA statement from yesterday or the day before, they're pointing out that there should be a separation of powers between the Oireachtas and the Gardaí, and that's always been there. But they feel now that by Minister McEntee not going, that she's picked Drew Harris's side, and therefore that separation of powers has been eroded. Now, that's what they're saying, and they have, you know, they have their issues as well with Drew Harris, and they're well known, and they're obviously, that's their side of the argument. But I mean, I do feel, I think it's fair to say that Minister McEntee was put in a tough decision. I think she was damned if she did or damned if she didn't. But at a time when morale is so low in the Gardaí, and I know what Neil's saying about people going into Templemore, the actual initial target for getting people into Templemore every time there was a new class was 200. Well, I don't actually think we've hit that. I don't think we've had 200 people passing out of Templemore in a very long time, not since Minister McEntee hit that target. The targets aren't being hit every year. We're seeing, I mean, if you're speaking to guards who are on the beat, they are completely and utterly fed up. And it's not just because of Drew Harris. It's because they feel that they're not being supported. And I know Neil is saying all these measures that are being put in place, but the Gardaí aren't feeling that. And I think by Minister McEntee not going to that, it's going to be completely exacerbated. Now, should they have invited Commissioner Harris? I think that's a completely different conversation. Perhaps they should have. Perhaps they should have had him around the table as well for discussion. But I think this has become a political thing now. The GRA aren't happy, the Gardaí aren't happy, and they're the ones that we need to be happy because we want to keep them in their jobs in the first place.
Well, let's see what happens next week at the GRA conference on Tuesday. Restaurant closures, I want to move to now, because the Restaurants Association of Ireland said this week over 200 restaurants, cafes and other food businesses have closed down. They say each closure results in 22 job losses and the total economic cost is €288 million. And they've said time and time again, Duncan, I'll come to you first, they want to return to the 9% VAT rate. Do you support that?
No, I don't support return to the 9% VAT rate, and I'd be heavily engaged and would have met an awful lot of cafes and restaurants in my own constituency, particularly over the last couple of months when there's been an increased lobbying effort in that area. But what they're saying to me on the ground, individual restaurant and cafe owners, is it's their energy costs, is their rate costs that are the real drivers of trouble, if indeed they are in trouble. And I think the 9% VAT rate, just to go back in history, was brought in at a time when we were heading towards what ultimately became 15.1% unemployment rate. It was a stimulus during a massive economic boost to try and get some jobs into the economy and try and get some stimulus. It worked then. It's a very different economy now. It's a full employment economy. It's a booming economy in many ways. So you know, a state support in form of a VAT cut, the argument for that isn't there. But I think there
That's
are
strange
arguments.
Though if the Restaurants Association of Ireland are saying cut the VAT rate to 9%, but you're saying you're talking to restaurant and cafe owners and they're saying that's not the issue.
I'm talking to them, and the big thing that they're telling me is the cost of refrigeration, the cost of food storage, the stuff that we're facing in our own households is magnified massively if you have a restaurant or a cafe, given the amount of
food. Why is that? Because their margins are tight.
Yeah. So the cost of that energy, the cost of their electricity, the cost of their gas bills has just exploded. And we see it at our household level, and you just extrapolate that for businesses. You know, so we could be looking in that area. I mean, we're increasing our energy generation from renewables, yet the cost of electricity is still tied to the price of gas. Mm-hmm. Why is that the case? There's systemic issues we could be looking at there. There's pressures on the grid as well. When there's large building, when there's data centers created, you know, there's huge pressures then on the energy system, which are causing issues. Okay. But the 9% VAT rate, I think, it's a big campaign around that. But the one person that's actually batted this back stronger than anyone else is actually Pascal Donoghue last year in the hospitality industry. So it's more a question for the minister and the government on this. We think other measures could be put in place, but having that VAT rate, which will take money from other parts of the economy and other investment that's needed in other part of the economy, we don't think that's the answer.
Neil?
Yeah, so we carried out an empirical report on this when I was in the Department of Enterprise. It was published about 6 to 8 weeks ago, and it showed the rising costs for business. And they are there, and they're fourfold. And Duncan's absolutely right. Energy is one part of that. Energy prices wholesale are coming down. Another part of that is inflation. Two areas that are beyond the government's control. And one area that is driving up costs, and to be honest, I'm quite responsible for it, is the cost of labour. And I stand by the fact that we've increased the national minimum wage, that we've introduced statutory sick pay, and just this week we passed second stage of auto enrolment. They are coming with costs for all businesses, but what the report showed is that the costs are most seriously being felt by hospitality, of course, but also independent retail. So what we've done is we're putting together a package of supports to meet that, because the VAT rate is of course one solution that can be looked at, it will be looked at as part of the budgetary context, but these businesses, many
you
of them,
want to see a reduction in the VAT rate, do you, for hospitality?
Well, what we suggested within Fine Gael, and this is the Fine Gael policy, is previously when it was rejected, as Duncan referenced, that was the overall VAT for 9% for the entire hospitality sector. Now, unfortunately, far too many parts of the hospitality sector that don't need it, large hotels, for example, were included in that. So that nearly doubled the cost. Whereas if you extrapolated down just to food-based hospitality, so your small cafes, your small restaurants, it can be done at a much lower cost. They, again, are the lowest margin, higher reliance on lower paid workers. But what we are doing, first and foremost, because we're doing more of that before the budget, and I'll get to it quickly, is we've the increased cost of business scheme, which is worth €250 million, being paid out to over 91% of businesses at the moment. We announced a €40 million energy package 6 weeks ago under Simon Coveney, and in the next 5 weeks, Minister Peter Burke and Minister Eimear Higgins will deliver a full package of supports for small businesses that we can put out in May. So these are the sort of things that are happening.
Okay,
now
so these things are coming, but you're still saying that the 9% VAT could be looked at for certain sectors. Louise, how's that going to play out?
I think this is going to be a bit of a political football now, to be honest. And I think Neil was actually at the discussion that took place at the Fine Gael Ardesh about on the motion that...
I was on the panel.
You're on the panel, yeah.
I voted for the motion.
This the thing, the motion passed to split the accommodation and food VAT rate to 9%, to split it for that lower kind of smaller restaurants back to 9%. And my understanding is of it that Fine Gael people were saying to me and other sources who were at that discussion were saying that what people in Fine Gael were saying is, well, the ball is now in Fianna Fáil's court. You know, they have the finance portfolio. Mike McGrath can do this if he wants to. So I wouldn't be surprised, given that Fine Gael are focusing on businesses all the time, and we've heard that so much under Simon Harris, you know, we want to support businesses, that if they're going to push this coming up to the election, coming up to the budget, Michael McGrath doesn't seem overly keen on it. And like Duncan said, actually, Pascal Donoghue has also said it, he doesn't think it's a good idea. But I think it might be a little bit more complex as well, because I remember when this discussion was first going on about splitting the VAT rate, someone said to me, well, what do you do if there's a restaurant in a hotel? What VAT rate do you charge them at? That's when it starts getting complicated. So it's a question of, is Fine Gael going to push hard enough? Is Fianna Fáil going to push back enough? But also, is it too complex to introduce? And I think those are the kind of things we're going to need to tease out. But I do think, especially coming up to the budget, especially when we've elections on the horizon, this is might be a sore point between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil.
Mm-hmm. Is it the question, though? I mean, Duncan says it's not really the issue that he's being told is at play here for these small business owners. Well, you're looking at the wrong thing.
Well, firstly, I'm in the Department of Finance now, so it's a decision you know for me more as well. Than him. No, I'm just to Louise's point that it, no, not that I know more than Duncan, far from it. But the report shows that the businesses that are suffering from increased costs primarily are food-based hospitalities of a smaller nature and independent
retail. So listen, given that you've reminded us now that you're in the Department of Finance, have you spoken to Michael McGrath about this?
We're having a sit down next week, but the budget discussions are starting now. This is something that will be discussed as part of the budget. Whether or not it can be done in this budget is to be seen, but
you,
it is.
You don't know how he feels about this, about splitting the VAT rate.
I haven't had the conversation with him yet. I'm only in the job 4 days and we haven't had our full set down meeting, but he knows my position. Mm-hmm. It's fairly clear. He knows the Fine Gael position. If it's possible, we can do it, but there's a lot more than this, and I'd say that
and
can be done.
And what does Pascal Donoghue think about splitting the VAT rate?
Well, I think the other thing is, when we referenced the discussions that were had last year, no one was talking about a split VAT rate at the time. This is about the singular VAT rate for hospitality, which we were told couldn't be split. The advice now has changed, but if you are going to introduce it, you have to introduce it in the most targeted manner. So it's not necessarily just hospitality, it's also hairdressers, but that's going to cost €36 million if we were to do it. All these things come at a cost. They come at a cost for the general budget, for the general taxation package, which will be worth just over €1 billion. These are decisions that government have to make, all three parties in government, all ministers, and this is why you're in government, to make these decisions.
Mm-hmm. Interesting times ahead then.
Yeah, look, it is difficult. I mean, you'll have bricks and mortar coffee shops competing with, your food, your coffee hut, that's pulled up 100 yards down the road. One pays rates, there's no rate base for another. You know, these are the things that I'm picking up when I'm speaking to local businesses. There's also a brutal truth about, enterprise capitalism, that some may just not be viable for whatever reason. So at what point does the state, support businesses, and at what point do they say, well, you actually, it's not viable? Mm-hmm. And that's difficult. So a broad VAT rate cut, one of our concerns would be, there'll be some businesses where you're just increasing the profit margin. There's others that will be viable and that you want to keep people in jobs, and there's others that just aren't viable. So it is difficult, but loud and clear what I'm hearing, it's rate base and it's the cost of energy is a real driver of some businesses that are viable going into difficulty.
And yet Fine Gael are pushing this split VAT rate option.
It became part of like the VAT system for over a decade, and now it's become a huge campaigning tool with IBEC and ISME and the restaurants associations. But it's on that side of the table. They like campaigning on VAT cuts, but we need to be looking at investment. We need to be looking at where we're targeting investment, and a broad cut, an extension, or bringing back in the 9% cut that existed, I don't think is something that's tenable in the modern economy.
Well, Claire, this was, we've spoken about law and order being centre of what Simon Harris is proposing to deal with and put at the centre of his agenda, business as well. So Fine Gael will be pushing hard on this one, it sounds like, with the other coalition partners.
They will. And I think when Simon Harris became Fine Gael leader, one of the first first things he brought forth was he wanted two proposals within 6 weeks from within Fine Gael on two committees. So he wanted one proposal on agriculture and one proposal on support for small business. And I do think that it's inevitable that within a couple of weeks we're going to see those reports. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be brought in. But I think there is cross-party support for businesses. We're seeing them struggle. So something will have to come in. But
cross-party support for businesses, but maybe not on this 9%.
I wouldn't say so. I think it's likely that we're going to see some form of support come in, but I think that 9% VAT rate was an emergency measure through the pandemic. I don't think it's sustainable, and I don't think it'll be politically popular either.
Right, well, let's move now to this open letter to Simon Harris this week. It was from the country's leading cancer specialists and also researchers, and I think people will have been surprised to hear about this. They're so worried about regression when it comes to the mortality rate, because we have the third highest mortality rate in Western Europe when it comes to cancer treatment. Louise, I'll come to you first. It was a theme that the opposition seized upon at the first leader's questions, wasn't it, with Simon Harris?
Yeah, and I mean, it seems like we're kind of going back in time in some way, and all we're talking about is Simon Harris's time in health, and whether that's scoliosis, whether that's cancer services, whether that's cancelled appointments. All these things seem really to be coming back to haunt Simon Harris in a way, and it's an interesting tactic from the opposition to kind of bring up all these issues with health, because, I mean, Simon Harris is out of the Department of Health 4 years now, but yet a lot of the problems that we had before the pandemic, we still seem to be having, whether whether it's the scoliosis crisis that seems to just be never ending. And I think that's one thing that came up quite a bit this week, was that those scoliosis waiting lists, but even the cancellation of appointments. And I think in particular, we heard Sinn Féin and the Dáil talking about cancelled chemotherapy appointments. Now, I know there's a little bit of confusion over those figures and they're up for dispute.
Children's Health Ireland disputed them, and then Sinn Féin said the figures had come from Children's Health Ireland.
Yeah, so I mean, Sinn Féin very much standing by the figures, and they're kind of saying, you know, that there's nuances about cancellations and all these sort of things, but those figures, we still really haven't gotten to the bottom of it, but CHI really denying those figures. But I think something as emotive as cancer, I think everyone has been touched by cancer, everyone's been lost loved ones and family members to, it's such a horrific disease. So I think it makes sense for the opposition to really be seizing on the health crisis, because we've crises in so many areas of health. So I think it'd be interesting to see if the opposition keep up on this, when you've things like housing, which in Fein have done so well on, but the kind of the theme of the week has been health.
Yeah, and just going back to that letter which came from the cancer specialist, and Duncan, I'll come to you because you're chair of the Oireachtas Cross Party group on cancer. So we heard that there are some machines that are left idle, people who know that there is something wrong, their doctors know that there's something wrong, and they're waiting for diagnostics and then they're waiting for their treatment to begin, and there's huge stress around that. And the call is for a ring-fenced budget for cancer care, which isn't there. And the response from Micheál Martin was to mention how much the investment in health has gone up in recent years. Yeah. So can you explain to us what's going on?
Yeah, I'll do my best. We made a lot of progress on cancer between 1998 and 2018. Our five-year mortality rates went from 45% to 64%. But in the last 7 years, the National Cancer Strategy has only been funded twice out of those 7 years in the annual budgets. And the ballpark figure for that is 20 million euro a year. And it wasn't funded last year, and it wasn't funded the year before. This is coming out of the back of COVID, delayed diagnosis, which we all know. And then we know Professor John Kennedy, chair of the Cancer Committee, saying that we have these machines all over the country, in Cork, in Galway, in Limerick, in Dublin. We don't have the staff. We're not training enough radiographers. And we are missing appointments. People are missing appointments. They don't have theatre space for operations. And we're missing our targets on screenings, on the three big screenings, on breast check, on colon screenings, and on cervical check. You know, so the danger here is we're not only stalling, but we're going backwards.
Yeah, and Neil, you can't ignore an open letter from the leading cancer specialists and researchers in this country, sounding the warning bell and saying we need to do something about this. The response can't be, sure, we're giving you loads of money.
No, and we're not going to ignore the letter. We take it very seriously. But it is important to put the exact context for people listening in of where we are in terms of cancer treatment, in terms of the fact that there's 215,000 people alive today who've come through cancer. Compare that to 7 years ago, that's up 65,000. That's more than people that were in the Aviva last week. We have made progress. And I think
progress has stalled. That's the argument.
And we will absolutely, but progress has stalled for lots of reasons. COVID can't be ignored in this, but it is also the context that we've 28,000 more people work in our health service now than 7 years ago, and we still have funding for 2,500 people. And I don't actually dispute anything that Duncan has said, to be honest. I think it's a fair concern that he's raised, a fair concern that the cancer specialist one, and it will be addressed, and we will absolutely, but we're not going to play politics, particularly not with cancer care. And unfortunately, we have seen that this week. We saw Sinn Féin saying that there was all these cancellations, and Children's Health Ireland and the HSE said quite clearly that these aren't for comparisons, these aren't figures, and these aren't cancellations, they're postponement. And as Louise said, all of us have been touched by cancer, and I remember when both my late parents were going through cancer treatment, chemotherapy can be postponed for lots of medical reasons. So to then try and use that as a political football by Sinn Féin, I just thought
it was shocking.
In fairness,
the CHI gave them those figures and they took them in good faith, and I think there's a kind of another question about why the figures were provided in the
first
place.
But they also said these figures shouldn't be used for comparative purposes.
Regardless of the comparison part of it, that's fine, that they did say that, but they did give them the figures. So I think there are questions about why those incorrect figures were given in the first place. I don't think that can be solely
put on Sinn Féin. But they provide the clarification which Sinn Féin completely ignored.
After the fact. After it was said in the Dáil.
All right, listen, I'm just conscious of the time, and I really do want to mention the Stardust inquest verdict yesterday. Duncan, your reaction to that news and what has happened since?
long overdue. This should have happened 40 years ago. I'm from the north side of Dublin. I was born just after this, but the Stardust tragedy hung like a cloud all over the entire country, but particularly over North Dublin. Everyone knew someone or had a relative who was either there or would go there regularly. And the quest for justice was for so long, and there's a feeling within the community they're kind of doubly bereaved for the loss of their loved ones and the impact on the community, but also the fact that there's a sense that where this happened, the type of community it happened in, a working class community, that justice was delayed for that reason. If it had happened somewhere else, that they wouldn't have had to go through this 40 year plus a struggle. So look, we need a state apology. I would hope there would be a fulsome state apology, and then maybe hope that we can see some healing beyond this, because it has hung like such a tragic cloud over the communities, particularly of Coolock and Artain, but over North Dublin for so long.
And Neil, do you see anything standing in the way of that state apology now?
I don't, but I think first and foremost, the Taoiseach spoke to some of the families last night by phone from Brussels, and he's going to meet them next week. So I think the first and most important thing he wants to do is to actually meet them, to sit down with them, to share their pain, to share their grief, because Duncan's right, justice delayed is justice denied. And if what comes out of those meetings is a fulsome state apology, that'll be right and correct and as per the family's wishes.
All right. Well, listen, we leave it there. Thank you all for coming in today.